Hello, everyone, and welcome to another race recap analysis here of the World Tour. And we're looking at Gent Wevelgem today. And as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Audi Cycling, author of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. And I mean, no spoilers ahead. Patrick, what exactly happened in Gent Wevelgem in 2024?
Well, it was a very windy day, that's for sure, over in Gent Wevelgem. And we had an early break, which never really got too far, to be honest. It only contained about eight riders or so, contained some pretty usual suspects of Mathis Lebert and also Johan Jakobs. They always seem to get into the breakaway, but they were caught relatively early because there was some crosswind action, which saw a lot of the main favourites for the race getting away in a group of, I think it was about 34 riders or so. However, this all came back together because only about three teams missed that whole move. I think it was like Lotto Destiny missed it. They were definitely one of those, but it all came back together. And then we saw Jonathan Milan pinging it off the front for Lidl Trek, Vanderpool, Hiffy, Stuyven, and Milan. And I think it might have been Rasmus Tiller was also there. However, then Stuyven got a puncture, sadly, so he went back to the peloton. Otherwise, he might have been a bit of an influential player in today as well. However, we saw Milan up the road, and it soon became apparent to Lidl Trek that it was going to be a better idea between the first and the kind of second set of cobbles today that it would be better if they brought Milan back to work with the group of Vanderpool, Pedersen, and Piffy, because that would give them a better shot of keeping away. And that was definitely the correct decision to make by the looks of things. They came back and they relayed really well. However, then we came to the first ascent of the Kemmelberg, where by that point Milan was pretty done after being off the front for quite a bit. So we saw then a group of Pedersen, Vanderpool, and Piffy making it off the front, going towards the Molenberg, and then also the final ascent of the Kemmelberg. This is really kind of like the main meal of the day, you could say. And we saw Pedersen really lighting the pace to try and drop Piffy. Obviously, he was more afraid of Piffy by the looks of things than Mathieu van der Poel. And that was very successful. Piffy was sadly dropped off in the back. He was only about 7 seconds behind, but was never able to make it back on. So we had Mats Pedersen and Mathieu van der Poel fighting it out from about 30 kilometers to go. Piffy joined the group behind, which contained Ben Turner, Hugo Page, and Anthony Turgis. For some reason, Ineos were just so keen to work on the front all day for everybody else, by the looks of things. It was a very selfless move by Ineos, it must be said, considering they didn't really get much out of the day. And then we saw a bit of an organized chase behind, led mainly by Sudal Quickstep for, of course, Tim Merlier. But the main thing was up ahead, Vanderpool versus Pedersen. How is this going to play out? They had plenty of time to be kind of playing a bit of cat and mouse. But it's Pedersen who led the sprint out from about a kilometre to go, 500 metres to go, 400 metres to go, 300 metres to go. That's when Pedersen decided to kick. And Vanderpool's in the wheel, in the draft. He tried to come out of the wheel and he just pretty much remained just on the back wheel of Pedersen, but just kind of out in the wind. And he had to sit down in the saddle, gave it a shake of the head. And Pedersen takes his second victory of Gent Wevelgem. Very impressive by Mads. And then behind, we had Jordi Meus in third, Philipsen in fourth, then Milan, Coy, Biniam Gamai, Tim Merlier, after all the work that Sudal Quickstep did, Dylan Groenewegen in ninth, and Matteo Trentin in tenth. Well, Scott, you must be very happy, considering that you got a Danish winner. What did you make of all the racing?
Yeah, I actually watched this race, most of it. I thought it was a very exciting one. And with seeing the Galacticos of Mathieu van der Poel and pseudo Galactico, whatever, is Mats Pedersen, is he allowed into the conversation with Roglic kind of taking a step out? Can we put Mats into the big boys category yet?
I would consider Mats to be more of a Galactico than Roglic is at the moment. People can find me about it in the comment section, but I think it's true.
I mean, at this point now in 2024, I think that's a fair assumption or a fair statement. But I think Lidl Trek really took the race by the scruff of its neck. Seeing Milan attacking away, that's not really a role we've seen him really do. Like, he's a sprinter, track rider, we know this. But I thought Lidl Trek, we've been so complimentary of their tactics, and they're really seizing the opportunities here in the classics races. And despite Visma Lyseberg looking like they were undefeatable, they weren't here at all. It looked like it was going to be Alpecin versus Visma Lyseberg, but Needle Trek well and truly just turned everything upside down. And I'm very excited for the remaining two big monuments. Well, this isn't a monument, but the two monuments in terms of cobblestone. But yeah, Needle Trek, perfect plan, or...
I was going to say it could have gone better for them. I think if, imagine a scenario where Stuyven doesn't get that puncture. I mean, he was really good at E3. And I think that you could have seen a scenario where Stuyven was in this group as well, and maybe Lidl Trek could have got, I mean, if Stuyven led it out, you could have got Pedersen first, Mats van der Poel second, and Stuyven could have come in third. Actually, I think that could have happened. So, arguably, yeah, it could have gone even better for today. I was really impressed by Lidl Trek. The fact that they were blocking very well, even though Kirsch unfortunately had a crash. That was a bit unfortunate. But they were just really attentive towards the front, like Milan and Stuyven, and I think it was maybe like, I can't remember who else it was, maybe like Edward Turns or something. They were just really good at like disrupting the moves and discouraging the chase behind. And, you know, you always saw like two riders working on the front, but then there was always Lidl Trek just sat behind them with three riders. And I think they did, I guess you could call it a masterclass today. It was very kind of quick step, kind of like mid 2010s quick step from Lidl Trek today. And I think they were, you know, they fully deserve a victory today. And Pedersen really, you know, bouncing back really well from E3 previously, earlier on in the week.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Mathieu van der Poel, second place in this. He hasn't won Get Well Game yet, but his best position out of yet. And could he have played it differently? We were talking in the preview that potentially was more for Jasper Philipsen, and Mathieu van der Poel was using this more as a tune-up for Flanders and Roubaix, but it absolutely didn't look like that. He was really trying to go for it.
I think Alps and De Koninck were in a bit of a weird spot where they could have played it for Philipsen, but you always bring that element of uncertainty into the sprint where you've also got Coy and Merlier here and Milan, of course, who has beaten Philipsen this year at Tirreno Adriatico. So I think that provided maybe too much uncertainty versus the 50-50 of Van der Poel versus Pedersen gave them a more likely kind of probability of winning. I don't think he could have done much different, to be honest with you. I think maybe he could have led the sprint out, but tried to do it from a lower speed because he seems to just have that better kind of acceleration. You know, we've seen him use that in the Tour of Flanders, and that's, you know, been very effective. However, I think that Pedersen knows this, and obviously Pedersen then led it out from a bit of a longer sprint, knowing that that suits him better. He led it out from maybe a little bit of a higher speed, knowing that that's better for him than it is for Van der Poel. So I think that Pedersen was just wise to what Van der Poel's strengths were today. I really don't think Mathieu could have done much different, in all honesty. Although I was quite surprised that Van der Poel seemed to be... He wasn't the one pushing the pace on the climbs, especially at the Kemmelberg. It was Pedersen. So it looked like Van der Poel maybe like not on the greatest day today. I really thought that he'd be the one setting those climbs alight and dropping everyone. But yeah, he seemed to just maybe be on the kind of reactive strategy today rather than the kind of like proactive going at it.
I love how finishing second and Get Well Go, oh, he wasn't quite there. It was like mid-form, midday. Just ticking easy, zone two. But yeah, in terms of Lorenz Piffy, that was, it almost looked like he was going to be a shoe-in for third place.
Yeah, that was a really sad one to see. Not only because he was on my fantasy team, which made me cry a little bit when he just, saw the gap just opening up to him. I was like, oh no, that was like a certain, like you say, a certain podium in a big race. I know he's won, you know, the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race, obviously, early this year. But yeah, he's a really, I mean, the fact that he's like, what, 21, 22, something like that. This is he is very much like Pedersen, I think. He's a very Pedersen-esque rider, that very cobbled, focused, but really fast at sprinting as well. So I think that, you know, the future's bright for Piffy. Obviously, he didn't really contest a sprint at the end because he was probably quite exhausted from the amount of effort that he had to put in when he was in the move with Van der Poel and Pedersen, who are big names. Like, tussling up with those riders at that age is just, I don't think enough praise can be put on to Piffy for how well he's performing this year.
I mean, you mentioned in the recap, but in terms of that third place, Jordi Meus taking it, and Jasper Philipsen and Milan, you would have thought, or even Coy would have been the guy for that podium spot. So quite a scout by Bora there, and a lot of points.
Yeah, there's a lot of points. I mean, somebody needs to make up for the shortfall of Roglic, obviously.
Which, he's not even in this race, and he's just like, there he is!
Yeah, I mean, it's very impressive from Mays. I think a lot of people thought it was probably going to be Van Poppel who was in third place, but yeah, Mays, really impressive performance. It did look like Philipsen was maybe a bit out of position, but, you know, you just, that's, I don't know, a problem that could be rectified. It looked like he was coming with more speed, so yeah, I think even if Philipsen came third, I don't think it would have made that much of a difference. I think it's a big thing for Mayus to come third place in such a big kind of cobbled race, probably one of the ones which suits him most. So yeah, great to see from Mayus, and an unexpected one, it must be said. I don't think he was on a lot of people's radar, probably not even really mine, to finish on the podium today. So that's big chapeau to him too.
I mean, you made a bit of a joke that Soudal Quickstep, you didn't even know that they were in the spring classic season. They made themselves a bit present. Eskain, I forgot, he races for Soudal. I mean, former Tour of Flanders winner. And I was going to say that as well, Mathieu van der Poel. Second time he's finished one-on-one with a Danish rider, and he just lost the sprint. So it's not exactly his favorite category. And You would really think Wout van Aert could, well, I said that Wout van Aert got outsprinted by Mats Pedersen, and my point is, Mathieu van der Poel outsprints Wout van Aert, who's one of the best sprinters in the world on his day, but he can't outsprint Kasper Eskain and Mats Pedersen. I know it's not like for like, it's a bit, yeah. Anyways, that aside, yeah, like you said, eighth place with Till Miller for Soudal Quickstep. I mean, they're not going to be happy with that.
No, I don't think so. Considering how much work they put into today, I don't think, I mean, 16 seconds between Pedersen and Van der Poel to third place. I guess they can only really commence their chasing once Merlier is confidently in the group. You know, they can only go so fast because Merlier was, you know, probably on his limit going up the Kettelberg. You can't just start pacing when he's not in the group, so... You know, maybe it could have ended up differently. Maybe he just, I don't know, ran out of gas. He seemed like, you know, he was right up there and in the sprinting. You know, the difference between Merlier in eighth versus Mayus in third might have literally been like a bike length and a half. It might have just been a bit unlucky. I think they worked probably quite a lot and maybe got swamped at the end by other teams, which were kind of had a fresher lead out because they were just looking to Soudal Quickstep to work all the time. So maybe they were kind of, I don't know, rolled over and used by everyone else, but that's the name of the game, isn't it? You know, cycling's a brutal sport, and you know, you finish eighth sometimes you finish first. It's just the way that things go. But yeah, they won't be happy with that, considering that they seem to just be struggling quite a bit at the moment as a classics team.
So I mean, Visma and Lisa Bike, who are an interesting outfit, they didn't have Wout or Laporte, both of who have won the last two editions. But in terms of the last two editions? No, that's not true. Binny won one in between. Sorry, Binny. Binny finishing seventh, as you said as well. But in terms of their team, finishing sixth with Olaf Coy. But do you think if Wout van Aert was here, would he have been in that mix with Mathieu van der Poel and Mats Pedersen? And I mean, if that was the case and Mats Pedersen won that, I would definitely... get his membership into the Galacticos on fast track. Or not?
I don't know.
Is it because he's missing a monument? He doesn't have that monument. He has a world championships. He has Grand Tour stages in every single Grand Tour, but he just doesn't have that one monument, the one that he also wants because of Olaf Sørensen. So
yeah, I think Wout would have been there. But he's so focused on these monuments. Like, that's the real form in his side, is that he doesn't have one. So I think that Wout would have been here. But yeah, I don't know. He's just focusing on the monuments. So he's going to go to Dwars Door next week. I don't really know why WoW wasn't here. I think it's a longer race, 250Ks. It kind of more closely represents the distance that you'll be going over to do the monuments of Roubaix and Flanders. So I don't get why he's doing Dwars Door when it's like a shorter race. I get, but it's a little bit, I don't know, maybe kind of more frequent cobbles, but I don't know. I would have preferred to have seen Wout here. I just think that would have been a far better idea for Visibility Bike to send him here and just have Coy there as the insurance policy in the sprint. So yeah, I think it is a bit weird that Wout wasn't sent here. Maybe he's just, I don't know. I mean, he would have had to stay upright to begin with to actually try and fight it out for victory, which, you know, it's obviously, you know, I'm not saying that I can ride in the gutter of the Paterberg, but I do think Wout would have been there, and I think he would have been influential. So I'm just a bit aggrieved that he's not been sent here. He's been sent to Dwars Door Vlaanderen with some killer Visma-Lease bike team, which don't really need him to go there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think this race would have done a bit more to tune out this form. But does this, Gent-Wevelgem and Tour of Flanders, they don't really have the best correlation in terms of winners. Okay, it's also been changed in the last few years where it was in relation to Tour of Flanders. But last year, Laporte didn't win Tour of Flanders. Binny didn't win Tour of Flanders either the year before. Well, Van Aert certainly didn't win Tour of Flanders in 2021. And neither did Christoph in 2020 and 2019. Mats Pedersen didn't win Tour of Flanders. So the Gent-Wevelgem win is not a great correlation to win Tour of Flanders. I think it's probably Boonen who's the last one who did it.
Maybe Van der Poel didn't give it his all, so he didn't.
He knew it. Yeah, he was like, you know what, mate? Tour of Flanders, where is that?
Yeah, people thought, I'll just let Pedersen win, because if I win this, I'm definitely not going to win Flanders. That is a joke, by the way, for people who don't know that. But yeah, I don't know. I think Pedersen's a hard one to gauge. He wasn't good at E3. Well, comparatively, he finished 11th versus finishing first today on a longer race. He looked very good on the Kemmelberg. I think that's the most important thing to be taking away from this as well. He used the one he was attacking. So it's a hard one. Actually, I think going into Flanders next weekend, I'm not really sure what to expect from Pedersen. E3 obviously had more frequent climbs. You know, they came at a kind of just on a faster rate. But it's a shorter race. So I'm struggling to predict what kind of Pedersen we're going to get next Sunday. He's a complete enigma. He could be really good or he might not be. So I think he's going to be a real interesting one to watch next weekend for sure.
I mean, you have to tune in for Tour Flanders preview show, which is out next week. But that's basically it for this recap race analysis. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel here if you're new. Let us know down below who you think is the favorite for Flanders if you don't want to wait until the preview show. And check out the Echelon Cycling Podcast episode 61 coming tomorrow. And also check out Audu Cycling or Patrick's channel with a lot of Velo Games preview as well. But with that, thank you very much for watching, and we will see you, hopefully tomorrow.